Hey everyone, welcome to the Happiness and Humans podcast. My name is Matt Phelan. Feels a bit weird recording today. It's been a couple of months since we've hit record. So really excited to have my next guest on. For those new to the show, Happiness and Humans is an exploration of understanding employee happiness and employee engagement at work. And I get amazing guests on to talk about everything from data through to science, through to new ways of thinking. And today I've got Paul Spires on to talk about a subject that is really close to my heart in terms of what I think the future looks like and some work that needs to be done. So today, it might on the surface not get everyone excited, but the subject today we're going to be talking about is the P&L, which isn't necessarily part of everyone's day-to-day role, but Paul and I are going to have a conversation today about how it needs to evolve and what that could look like and how important that is for everything from happiness through to well-being and performance. Today, I've got Paul Spires on. He's very passionate about this subject. So, Paul, in your own words, could you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Paul Spires. I'm host of the new P&L Principles and Leadership and Business podcast, and I'm founder of the new P&L Institute, which is a culture and leadership consultancy focused, as you've just suggested, on how we build more purpose-led business and more principled leadership.
Paul, it's a question, it's not in our pre-planned questions, but when you talk about this, something I always like to ask people is, like, why do you care? Like, there's an important point here that you're trying to get across, and we'll get into the detail of it today, but why do you care about the P&L? Why not just leave it as it is? Like, what's making you get up in the morning to come on these podcasts and talk about the importance of this?
Yeah, I mean, it's come from a very personal place. I used to have a marketing and branding business many years ago, over a decade ago now, and it was a small business, around sort of 12 to 15 people, but we were subject in around sort of 2010 to 12, subject to a series of very unethical actions from a client that ended up taking the business down. And it was in the middle of all of that that I was sitting on the couch in the office one night, and I was thinking, there's got to be a better way of doing business than what we had been subjected to at that point. And I came up with the idea of the new P&L, Principles and Leadership. So my belief, even in the essence of that idea at that point, was there must be a better way, as I say, of doing business, one based on principles and leadership, not just on profit and loss. And if we get that new P&L right, we get the ethics right, the authenticity right, the principles right, the values and the purpose, then it should have a positive rather than a negative impact on the traditional P&L. Yep. Now, that sort of stayed with me for many years as an idea until around 2019, when the idea of a new P&L and a podcast came together somewhere in the back dusty blocks of my brain. So I thought, well, I'll dip my toe in, give it a shot. And the new P&L podcast took off because of the sort of the desire for people to understand more about purpose, to bring it into their business, to understand what a new P&L looks like. So we launched the new P&L Institute on the back of that in 2021. And that's where we find ourselves today. So as grand as it sounds, and I don't mean to make it grand, I am on a mission. I'm trying to bring this new P&L concept out to the world, and whether we change one business, 10 businesses, 100 businesses, or 1,000 is not really the numbers. It's that people understand that there is a new way of doing business based on the new P&L rather than just the old.
Yeah, that's really fascinating, Paul. We're going to come back to that and delve into that. But before we kick off, we'd love to know a bit about you, Paul, and specifically what makes you happy. That can be work, it can be life, it can be whatever first comes into your head.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very blessed to have a wonderful set of family and friends and my children, and I love spending time with all of them, my family. I'm a family first person, like you mentioned to me just before we came on the podcast itself. Surfing makes me incredibly happy. I've done it since I was 13. I can still remember, you know, when you start to learn to surf, you go from white waves to green waves, sort of taking the unbroken wave. I can still remember when I was 13, that first unbroken wave I took. I knew where it was, I knew how I felt, and that never goes away. You know, I'm 55 this year, and I'm still as passionate now as I've always been about it. It's the most amazing experience I ever have in my life in terms of that peacefulness out the back of the sets, waiting for that wave, that kind of spiritual element, punctuated by these moments of adrenaline when you're paddling and jumping up on the wave. I love the new ideas, make me happy. I'm a really curious and creative person. I love exploring new ideas, trying to figure out how they can work. Most of the ideas I have are rubbish, but a few work and come together every now and again. But that's, you know, you've got to throw a lot of lumps of clay to mold something beautiful, don't you? And that's, I love the whole process of idea creation, generation, and seeing that come to fruition.
Yeah, I love, I can't surf. I've tried to surf. I'm terrible at it. But I do think surfing is a good, in my head, when I'm trying to think, is the business going well? Is life going well? I try and imagine, am I surfing?
Yeah.
If I am and it's going well, that's kind of the image I have in my head. If in my head I'm falling off all the time and it's not quite working,
yeah.
I sort of go back to basics and think like, what's going on here? What do I need to do? So, do you ever bring your surfing mentality into your business life, Paul?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's an interesting analogy you make, you know. And I often think when you keep failing in business, it's like you got to get the basics of surfing right. You've got to learn how to paddle and stand on that board before you can actually surf that wave. And I think that's a very similar example to business. You've got to get the foundations right. You can keep standing up and falling if you haven't got your technique right, you haven't got all of the things in order in the right way, and most importantly, you don't prepare your fitness for it. You know, you've got to be fit to be able to paddle, you've got to be able to flexible to stand up. And the same thing applies in business. If you don't have that preparation, you don't have that exercise, if you like, that business fitness, then you're not going to be able to ride the wave because you can't get the basics right. You can't paddle and stand up.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks for sharing that. It's really useful. It's really useful to think of it like that. And we'll definitely get, and again, I think we're going to get back to that fundamentals bit in the P&L as well. And Paul, I just want to talk about your career a bit. I often get people who listen to the podcast or come to my talks think that I'm from New Zealand. And I've been asked on multiple occasions, when did I come to this country? And I say, when I was born.
Yeah.
And so for those listeners, it's not a couple of Kiwis having a chat, but we do know that your career has definitely possibly spanned a couple of continents. But tell us about your career and how things have panned out for you, how you started, what your first job was, and how you got to here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I left school quite early. I left when I was 16 for various reasons. Took up a job in a photographic studio and then ended up becoming a professional musician for about 5 or 6 years in New Zealand from my late teens to early 20s. And we toured New Zealand, played a lot of gigs, and ended up carving a bit of a niche for ourselves in the motorcycle gang event industry in New Zealand, if that's what it's called. But we used to play for a lot of motorcycle gangs. And so when the band disbanded at 23, I ended up taking myself off to university at that point, and I studied criminology. I was looking at gang subcultures and that sort of thing because I met some really fascinating, some really interesting people through that period and saw a different side of life, you know, when we were in the band. So I studied criminology for 4 or 5 years to postgraduate level. And then I came out, I couldn't find a job in the criminal justice sector, happened to land a job in marketing and ended up being there for the next 20 odd years, I guess, 20, 25 odd years till I was around 50, 52 and had my own agencies, worked in senior leadership roles and others. And then I launched the new P&L, as I said, the podcast in 2019, did some independent consulting work, then launched the new P&L Institute. And that's what I've been doing for the last 4 to 5 years, is just driving this message of the new P&L.
Paul, just to go back, a couple of things there you mentioned. Obviously, you're in a band, right? And that's more than one person, I'm guessing, by the description.
Yes. Yeah.
And then you talked about like this group of people that are sort of like in biker groups. And we often see in happiness data the importance of belonging.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can be positive, sometimes it can be negative and so on. But in those years, 16 to 23, I think you said.
Yeah.
You learn anything about belonging and why people are in those groups? Because I'm presuming it's not just the motorbikes. I'm presuming there's more to it. But is it just the motorbikes? Is there anything that you could share with us that comes to mind from that period?
Yeah, I mean, I can't talk with authority because I'm not a psychologist and I'm not a criminal psychologist or anything else, but I can talk from my own experience, being in the middle of that for a while. And people do strive for belonging, and often gangs are a result of people not finding that sense of belonging. Or, you know, lots of people often come from sort of troubled backgrounds or backgrounds with families that were maybe, you know, in chaos or whatever it happened to be. It's not always the case, but sometimes it is. And certainly with some of those that I got to know in New Zealand, they found it for the first time in their life, some of them, a real sense of belonging, of camaraderie, that people had their back, that people were looking after them. Now, some of the activities, you know, were less than salubrious, shall we say, but they still found that camaraderie. And that's no different to a tribe or a team or a collection of people in, you know, in business that find a sense of common purpose and belonging. We find it in all sorts of ways. And I, one thing I find, I guess, slightly judgmental is, you know, people find belonging where they need to. It's not always the right place from our perspective, but sometimes it does do those people. It gives those people what they need in that moment, that sense of camaraderie, that sense of belonging, that sense of self-worth and confidence. And I guess if we're to take one step back, sometimes it's, and this is a grand statement, but the fault of society that we're not looking after certain people in certain areas or socioeconomic stratas that forces people into a position where, because they feel there is no lack or there's no opportunity anywhere else, they put themselves in this position because that's the only opportunity they have for belonging.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting. I think about this in someone that I think is creating a following for the wrong reasons, which we've got International Women's Day coming up this week. And I think some of the stats that you read around that are horrific, like how many women deal with violence on a day-to-day basis, the fact that there's the gender pay gap and all these things that need to be showcased. And I look at some of these people that follow Andrew Tate as an example, who personally is someone I think is a horrific individual. But there's an interesting thing there. I feel like there's young men that don't understand where they sit in society, that are looking for something and someone to help them understand and be the guiding light, because I feel like there's missing role models in the sort of new world for men. And I think there's young guys out there that are sort of getting trapped into this world by someone who is just by default there because there's a lack of male role models that are setting example in the new world, because the world needs to change. It didn't work the way things were set up for men and so on. But I think it's left a big gap that people like Andrew Tate are filling in. And I think that they're just picking up on your point there around sometimes it's a gap, isn't it? So sometimes people go towards what they need, but it's not always in the right place, but we can't always judge whether that's right or wrong.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, the desire to belong is clearly a natural part of the human condition.
Yeah.
And even if you go back to, I think, and I might be wrong, so I'm sure someone will let me know if I am, but I think it was Emile Durkheim, the French sociologist, he talked about the cult of personality, and in the absence of, he was looking at in the early 20th century, the demise of religion even at that point, and that would prompt a desire for us to reach out, to look for other sort of people to aspire to look up to, and that cult of personality would come to politicians and sports people and celebrities and everything else. And we can see that play out over the 20th and 21st century. People need role models. They need someone to look up to aspire to believe in over and beyond themselves. It's a natural part of the human condition. That's why religion is so successful. So in the absence of positive role models, sometimes we do end up with the wrong role models.
Yeah. And in bringing it back to the world of work, I'm always fascinated when a company goes for a rebrand or a company name change, how much it impacts people.
Yes.
And it could just be the change of the name or the change of logo, but you see it in the data, it impacts people in a company and you don't think it will. But the example I always use would be like, if we turned around today and said, Paul, we're going to rebrand you as Steve, or Matt, you're going to be Harry. It's like, it is just a name. It doesn't really matter. But we'd both probably be a bit like, well, I don't want to change my name. So I think even our attachment to those areas. So let's move us on to the subject of today. You sort of touched on this a bit about why you care, but does the world need a new P&L? Why can't it's worked, or has it worked for 100 years or more? Why don't we just stick with what we've got?
Because I don't think it is working. And I think, you know, technology, for all its faults, has facilitated a generation that has been able to, many generations, who've been able to look outwards and see that the world doesn't have to exist perhaps the way it always has. The world has to evolve. There is definitely a trust deficit within business and its relationship with consumers and with the wider world as well. The new P&L, or whatever it happens to be, purpose-led businesses, however we define them, is an attempt, is a desire to put purpose and principles at the heart of business. That can't be a bad thing for the future of business, for the future of people. It promotes collaboration, innovation, ideas generation. There's a lot of evidence out there that it, you know, leads to more loyal clients or suppliers or customers. And again, a natural part of the human condition is to be more open, to collaborate and provide ideas. When you rally around someone who has a purposeful vision, that you can see you're part of a purposeful legacy, you're trying to create something together and build something for the future. So I think, you know, that's back to your question. I guess I would say on things like this, I always do what I call a 180 reflection. And I say, well, what does a business without purpose look like, or a business without principles look like? And that's often low productivity, toxic cultures, apathetic cultures, maybe at best, high staff attrition and everything else. So if that's a business without purpose, then the principle of a business with purpose and principles must be a good thing. So then the question is, how do we communicate it effectively? And equally as importantly, how do we ensure that that communication translates into action in the culture? You know, how do we deliver it physically in the business? There's a phrase I often use when I give the workshops, and it's called vinyl values. And what I mean by that is, sometimes when you walk into a business, you'll see on the reception wall or the boardroom wall, they've got their values and principles printed, and they're usually on thin vinyl and stuck onto the wall. And unfortunately, too often, the commitment to those values is about as thin as the vinyl they're printed on, which is why I call them vinyl values, because they end up becoming a substitute for, rather than a demonstration of, the values and the principles that business is supposed to adhere to. So part of the role of a leader is to get those values metaphorically or literally off the wall and into the culture. How do we demonstrate that that purpose, those principles, those values that underpin that business are being, having life breathed into them and being delivered by action every day?
I love that. I love that. We often describe something similar as moving from 2D to 3D.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that, the concept of vinyl values. And the trust deficit, Paul, can you just tell us, it's a great phrase. I think I know what it means, but I don't think I've heard it used in this context before. Could you just bring the listeners in on what you mean by that?
Yeah, I just think fundamentally there is a lot of examples of broken trust between brands and consumers, between each other. Technology is probably, you know, when we think about even things like misinformation, disinformation, it's called questioning us, forcing us to question what we see and what we hear and what we read. I just think there's a lot of distrust out there at the moment. And one way to try and bring some of that back in is for brands to live genuinely by their values and to demonstrate it, as I said earlier, in their actions. So not greenwashing or trust washing or all of these other washing, but actually demonstrable examples of the way their values are translated into action. We have to find a way to bring trust back between leaders and employees and leaders, and brands and their consumers, and brands and society as well.
Yeah, no, thanks, Paul. It's a really useful frame of it. The next question I had for you is around why, and it's around why are the, I see it as well in our customer base. There's a new generation of leaders that are questioning the P&L themselves as well. And why, when you're working at the P&L Institute and you're delivering workshops and so on, what, and you speak to people that come to you, people that listen to this podcast, and they go, you know what, I'm going to get in touch with Paul. Like, what's their why? Why are they? Why do they care? I've asked you your care, but like, what's driving them? Is it the financial metrics? Is it the way they're raised? Is it TikTok? Like, what's driving it, Paul?
I mean, I think there are multiple answers to that, but one certainly is that it is not antithetical. A new P&L is not antithetical to an old P&L. In fact, I believe if we adopt a new P&L, for some of the reasons I've already highlighted, it impacts positively on a new P&L. So we end up with more customer loyalty, more staff loyalty, less attrition, higher productivity, more people believing in what they're doing and wanting to contribute and work for that business. So I think, you know, part of it, if you want to put it down to raw commercial terms, we are all looking for that greater commercial edge in business to ensure that we have greater productivity, greater profitability, and a new P&L, I believe, can contribute positively to that. But over and above that, I think there's lots of generations, and I'm Generation X, so lots of generations were kind of conditioned to believe that you go to work and it's a bit of a drudge, but you know, you can earn money and you get home and you crack open a beer and you say, thank God that day's over. But we give up a third of our life, effectively, during our working life to the job. 8 hours in the job, 8 hours either side, and 8 hours of sleep, for argument's sake. So I think we need to find, and we should find, and we deserve to find more purposeful work, something that we can believe in, something that we know that when we're there for those 8 hours, have the right values that align with us, something that we can see a future in. Even if that future is shorter than maybe it used to be, you know, we might have 3 years in consecutive businesses where we find the purpose and we move on, rather than 20 years in one business where the purpose never aligned. We're in a position now with globalization, and what I mean by globalization, not economic globalization, but technology has facilitated the creation of communities right around the world. We're speaking to people that we never would have before, social media, for example. So that's a positive side to it. And we can create global communities where we can understand and share those values, talk about them within business, and then have those conversations within our own businesses about how our personal and professional values align. So I think there's a lot of positives to developing a new P&L commercially and culturally and personally.
Yeah, Paul, thank you. A lot of our listeners come here for sort of the research, the data, the science. Is there any interesting research in this area that you can point us to that people should look up and have a look at?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to take a slightly left of centre recommendation on this. So we're doing some research later this year, and when we do it on the new P&L, I'll come back to you and let you know. And your listeners may want to read that as well. There's all of the classic research out there and articles and thought leadership from the Harvards and the EYs and the McKinseys and the Deloittes and all that sort of thing. But actually, if you want to really understand the value of what a new P&L-ish concept looks like and the purpose at the heart of the business and everything else, I'd actually recommend listeners read Let My People Go Surfing by Yvon Chouinard, the founder of Patagonia. Yeah. Because that, more than any of the research I've read, is a very practical, a very clear, a very coherent example of how to breathe purpose into a business from the very first day, and all of the ups and downs that come along with it, all of the challenges. It's a real sort of warts and all example of what happens and how you achieve it, and what the real challenges are, the nitty-gritty challenges of being a business that has the environment, that has purpose at its heart, and also the successes. You know, they're a hugely profitable company. Probably most listeners will know they recently gave over, I think, 99% of the company to environmental causes, to try and, for the planet, basically, to invest that profit, reinvest that profit in environmental and sustainable initiatives over the next few years, the next few decades. So rather than reading the research, or in addition to reading the research, I would read that book, because there's a massive difference between the theory of this and the practicality of it. You know, how do we fundamentally deliver it? And the reason a lot of people don't believe in the purpose and principles approach is because there's so much fluff around it. There's an industry that's built up that is largely built on a veneer. This book gets to the root of it and talks about the challenges, as I say, and talks about the issues as well as the opportunities. And I had on my podcast Sean Thompson a few months ago, who's former world surfing champion, 1977 world surfing champion, which when I was a kid, I had him on my wall in a poster, and then I ended up interviewing him last year. So that was quite a milestone for me. But he worked for Yvonne and Patagonia just after he gave up his professional career. And I talked to him about this book, and he said, you know, everything it says and everything they talk about, that's what they're delivering. There's an authenticity to it. So I would recommend people read that book as a piece of research, if you like.
Yeah. And what, there's people out there, I can get the link, because there's a link between activity, outdoors world, like surfing, and what Patagonia produces, a product. But I can imagine a law firm saying, well, that's different for us. We all wear suits. We're in the city. Is there anything that can be taken from it in what you'd call different types of industries, like professional services or blue collar workers that are working in a factory? Like, is there more that can be taken from it outside of that world that you can get specific on that might be useful?
100%. I mean, we're all humans. We all contribute to the world and we all take from it. Any business has a need or has a desire or should have a desire to lower its environmental impact. The principles that this book espouses can be applied to any industry. It's not about how they make more environmentally friendly clothing. It's how they've created a more environmentally purpose-led business. And I think regardless of the industry, any leader will be able to read this book, any manager will be able to read this book and say, I can see how the principles apply. Most things in business are not complex. They're simple. We know the answers. It's whether we have the inclination to address them and the motivation and the commitment to deliver on them. Nothing's really that complex in business if we really want to make the commitment to it. You know, we saw at the beginning of COVID incredible creativity when the shutters came down and COVID stopped people selling in the streets, the high street, whatever it happened to be. There was some amazing innovative ways to get products back into the hands of customers. And all of those businesses that prior to COVID said hybrid working cannot work for us. There's no way it can work for us. It doesn't work for this culture. And then all of a sudden on the 23rd of March, when we had to do it, it was remarkable how quickly it all turned around and everyone was able to work remotely. So when the initiative, the incentive, the motivation is there, anything can happen. And I think one thing we can take out of COVID, amongst many other things, but one important thing for business is that anything is possible if the motivation and the commitment is there and the intention is there. Intention is the key word. So whatever is in the Patagonia book, Let My People Go Surfing, can be applied, but anything else can be applied within business as well. If we have the intention, that's the requirement.
Yeah, absolutely. Just moving on the P&L, I think it's about 2012, when we used to have our board meetings, when we first invented the Happiness Index, which was an internal tool at our marketing agency, we started tracking employee happiness and customer happiness. And we used to start the board meetings and we'd go through what we'd call the traditional P&L, and then we'd go through the employee happiness stats and the customer stats. And we just, by as a joke, we started calling it P&L 2.0. And then our next evolution was to flip it round. And we started doing the people stuff first, and then we started doing the finances. But we hadn't really evolved it. We were reaching out for like what you're talking about. We didn't go that advanced. We were just adding more interesting data into a board meeting, which I felt made the board meetings more about the future than the past, because financial numbers really are. They've told you what's happened in the past. Does happiness, we've got to ask with the name of this podcast, does happiness belong in this future of the P&L, Paul?
Of course it does, yeah. I mean, it's a central component of the human condition, doesn't it? So, isn't it? So the role of the leader, or of a good leader at least, is to work with and to look after the whole person, not just the part of that person they employ for their labor in return for salary. You know, complete humans are turning up at work, often work in return is only looking after the bit of the labor that provides the return, as I say, for the salary. So happiness is essential to this. And when you have a core purpose and those principles in your business, and employees can see that and they feel they're part of something and they're engaged within, they feel their ideas are welcomed and they can see their ideas coming to fruition, they feel they're part of something and they've got an inspiring visionary leader who wants to take them with them to create this legacy, and that's got to provide more happiness than just being a human version of a machine cranking out whatever it happens to be. And that's not a reflection on the activity of the role. That's about whatever that role is, ensuring that people understand that what they're producing on that given day is part of a bigger picture. They're part of something collectively. So happiness is 100% part of the new P&L.
So Paul, let's pick the penultimate question. Let's pick if you could just help us like see this future P&L, get into a bit more detail, bring it to life for us. Let's pick the happiness index. We work across all sectors. So we're working with retailers, law firms, but let's pick a bank, right? They're used to dealing with P&Ls all the time, money in, money out. So let's pick them. Let's pick, I'm not going to name one, but one of the high street banks. Now, what would their own P&L look like in a Paul Spires future? How would they explain the mechanics to it, the mechanics of what a bank's own P&L would look like in the future?
So one thing that, and I think they're catching up now, but one thing that I know traditional banks have struggled with is moving into the fintech market. And that's, you know, you've seen lots of young, flexible, agile fintech brands launching lots of products that the traditional banking sector has failed to keep up with or has struggled to keep up with. And one of the benefits of the new P&L, as I've alluded to a few times, is when people feel that there's that common purpose, they understand what they're trying to achieve with that business, it opens the floodgates internally, if the processes are right and the permissions are right, for more ideas generation, more innovation. Banks need more innovation to be able to compete with the fintech sector. And so as a clear example of the new P&L, if those teams, and I would imagine a bank, I've never worked in one, but banks are quite rigid, I would have thought, in their roles. You're either a branch manager or an analyst or whatever it happens to be, but everyone has ideas and everyone has a view on how that bank could change something in their immediate sphere of influence. So I use in one of my workshops, I use an example of BHS and 11,000 people that were laid off. They would have all had one idea for how that business could be transformed. So let's use that example with a bank. And there's a bank with 10,000 people in it. And each of those people have one idea in their immediate sphere of influence that could change the business in some way. It might be the way the till works or something in the warehouse or whatever it happens to be. And let's say, for argument's sake, only 10% of those ideas were good ideas. So out of that 10,000, 1,000 were good ideas. And let's say out of those, 100, 10% were transformational ideas that could really change the business. That's 1% of the total number of ideas submitted. But it's 100 ideas for a business that could have largely run out of ideas, that keeps looking outwards for ideas, when in fact the majority of the answers for the way that business can change and transform lies within it. But unless you have a core purpose and you clearly articulate that purpose and you demonstrate how it translates into action and you bring all of these people into the conversation to encourage collaboration and ideas generation and potential innovation and so on, people believing in something and believing in a future, and you don't have the opportunity to open up the tremendous, what I call a nation of creatives, tremendous ideas that exist within that business. So that's an example that, you know, look inward to where the opportunities and the answers are to the business rather than always looking outward.
I love that, Paul. I can't believe time is flying here and we're on to our final question already. I was going to ask you what you would say to 18-year-old Paul, but I'm going to change it to 16-year-old Paul now that we've heard your story. If I sort of summarize the show, I find it fascinating. I think your experiences have led you to look at the world differently, which is why I think what you're working on is so valuable. So you're a great example of diverse experiences changing how someone views the world, which I think is positively brilliant for all of us, Paul.
Thank you.
But if you were going to go back, I don't want to change anything because your experiences have made you who you are. But if you did get a chance to speak to Paul, 16-year-old Paul, is there a message that you would pass on?
Yeah, surf more and worry less. it's probably end up on my gravestone as well. Yeah. I think that's probably that's the piece of advice.
I think that's the name of your next book, Paul.
Probably, yeah.
On behalf of myself and our listeners, I just want to say thanks for coming on. This is an incredibly, incredibly important area. And I thank you for the work that you're doing in it. Keep moving forward. And I really appreciate you coming to share if anyone listening wants to follow your journey, Paul, what, other than turning up at your local surf area, what's the best place to follow your journey?
I mean, you can find me on LinkedIn, Paul Spires, S-P-I-E-R-S, or principlesandleadership.com is the website. Or if you type in the new P&L principles and leadership in business into any Spotify, Apple, Google podcasts, whatever it happens to be, you'll find the podcast and follow us there as well.
Paul, I've enjoyed this. I've learned a lot. I hope you have an awesome day.
Yeah, Matt, thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul.
Cheers, man.